Hi, I'm David Pogue. Welcome to the RV Navigator Podcast, your digital home for the RVing lifestyle. Visit the RV Navigator homepage at rvnavigator.com for additional information about each episode. And now, here are your hosts, Ken and Martha, podcasting from their mobile studio that might be parked in a campground near you.
Hello, this is Ken, your RV Navigator.
And Martha, the co-pilot.
Wait. It's not Ken anymore. It's
Ken. Who are you now?
It's Ken Chan. Ken Chin.
And who am I? Martha-san?
Martha-san.
Because we are talking to you.
Ken-san and Martha-san.
From Japan.
On the road, once again, the RV Navigator has traveled thousands of miles.
And flown for 14 hours just to bring some news to you that not our usual. And
of course,
we only do this for the listeners' sake,
that's for sure, because we want to have firsthand reports about all the exciting things that are going on in Japan.
And as usual, whenever we try to do these podcasts on the road, there are technical issues that must be confronted, and who knows how far we'll get or how well this will sound. But we always try very hard to stay in touch with you at the time that you expect to hear from us.
Because
and
at the
we
moment,
will give it a best shot.
We are recording on my camera, and we're making it's a dark video, but we're recording on the camera because my wireless microphones do not connect up to my laptop as I expected.
They still have jet lag.
Oh, well, yes, and I guess in my jet lag condition, I know I left my wireless microphones in Florida, and then I have another set at home, and I thought these would work.
And they didn't.
Well, dear listener, we have gone through great pains to make this podcast, and we will make it a good one because it's actually very interesting.
Japan is a wonderful place to visit.
So we left O'Hare for the 14-hour flight, and it's day for night, and that just takes a long time. So we arrived 4 days before our tour actually starts.
You know, twice a year in our country, we change the clock 1 hour, and people get all jacked out of shape about how am I going to possibly adjust to having one more hour of sleep or less sleep or whatever. And when you come over here, at best, my body can do 2 time zones a day, and we have crossed 14 time zones.
Right.
So it's just hard. And we came extra early this time to make sure we were ready to go when our official tour started. But I still do not feel 100%. And I've been here almost 2 weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, we came to Japan this time for a land tour with our favorite travel organization, Overseas Adventure Travel. We have been to Japan several times, frankly, but we have never taken a more or less cultural tour as we did this time. So we're not here to see the sights, but boy, are we getting a load of culture. I'll tell you, you fly to Japan, and Tokyo is just a fabulous city. I mean, it's very modern, tall skyscrapers, and, you know, modern conveniences. But boy, is it different.
And superficially, it looks like a Western big city.
Exactly.
Because of the architecture, much of which has been fairly recently built because they have learned how to cope with the earthquakes that are a constant worry in their lives. In fact, a few days after we got here, there was a fairly strong earthquake in the northern island of Japan, not where we are, and they were worried about a tsunami. All over in the news, we could see boats fleeing the harbors and going out to sea and having to adjust to that. So they have some problems that we don't have, but they have done a wonderful job of maintaining their culture and yet being modern people in the modern world.
And that's a good way to phrase it, because a lot of times we go to big cities outside the United States and we kind of feel like it's a third world country, or that we have our cities are better, and we just kind of yearn for the modern conveniences that we have back at home. You know, you go to Jakarta, and you see people in poverty, and, you know, you just say, ooh, we're living on a standard that's much above theirs, and I couldn't live like that. But in Japan, They absolutely have a standard of living which is equal to ours.
I think it's better.
Yes, I would have kind of.
We see many things here that we envy and wish we had in our country, starting with the lack of a car. Even though we know the Japanese are very knowledgeable about cars and have beat the pants off of our car manufacturers at various times over the year, many people here in the big cities survive without owning one at all because they have such a wonderful mass transit system.
And that's a big step forward. Many of our cities are looking at major traffic jams every day, rush hour in and out twice a day. And in some cities like New York, where they're putting in the
congestion fees,
as they have done in some European cities too, the Japanese have taken a whole different approach to this. And I think it's working. And that approach is that they are big on mass transit and mass transit that works.
It's clean. It's well organized, even for those of us who haven't memorized the 2,100 different symbols that a poor Japanese school child has to learn to be a literate citizen of his country. We are able to master the subways because they are well laid out. They are well marked, color coded.
But they go everywhere.
There are announcements made in Japanese, of course, and in English, and it's not the kind of garbled, mumbly stuff you hear in our airports sometimes when they're calling you to the gate. Everything is well done and very thoughtfully
done. And the cars are air-conditioned, and they run on time, and they're not only on time, but they are frequent. And so we have found, and of course we have to remind people that Tokyo is the largest city in the world.
No, I don't know if it is anymore.
It's much bigger than any other city that we have been in recently, certainly.
Mexico City, maybe.
It's a huge city, so that these urban problems could escalate, as they have in many other countries, they could escalate to a point where it's unlivable. And I think some of our cities have had that problem.
And another thing that just blew my socks off is this country is very neat. You don't see any garbage, and you don't see any garbage cans.
Right.
So you say to yourself, well, where am I supposed to throw the little wrappings from this sandwich that I just ate? You have to take it back to the hotel and throw it in the wastebasket in your room. And they did this a number of years ago. They had a bad terrorist incident where somebody put sarin gas in garbage cans and injured, I think even killed a number of people. And they decided that that was too hard to prevent from happening again. So they just took away all the garbage cans, and everybody complies. Personal responsibility is the motto here, and they don't throw anything on the ground ever. You just don't see garbage at all.
So to make a city work, you have to get the people to work, and that's the job of the mass transit. And the mass transit is clean, as I said, and efficient, and it's reasonably priced. We've been paying for a ride, it's about a buck and a half, maybe, so that it's very reasonable. And unlike our other tours, where we get a bus, and that takes us around to the various sites of the city, in Tokyo, because they don't want to use buses as little as possible, we took public transportation, and it worked. We were able to transport, you know, our sixth group of 16 and travel around and to see the sights without too much trouble. It's amazing.
Which is typical of OAT trips. Our guide has a little broadcasting mechanism he talks into as we walk around. They call them the whispers. And we all walk around with listening devices, headphones. And even when we lose sight of him on the subway, which can happen at times because there are a lot of people using it, you never really feel terrified because he can tell you, I'm by the 7-Eleven and I'm going to turn right. And when you get to the 7-Eleven, you know that you can do that too. So moving around, even with larger groups, works very well here. We're impressed.
But of course, we have run across some cultural differences.
Are you talking about the toilet? The first hotel we stayed in had a large sign, I guess I would say, pasted on the wall next to the toilet, and I used Google Translate to try to get a handle on what all those different signs meant. And even once I had them translated into English, it was overwhelmingly complex. Japanese like to be clean from stem to stern.
I have to name this podcast after this, after the toilets after in the Japan, but I don't know exactly what to call it. But clean from stem to stern might be the good title for this podcast. On the wall, in the toilet room, in every room in this hotel, as well as all the hotels we have stayed in, is a box in Japanese.
With push buttons.
With push buttons on it.
And you can regulate the heat, how hot the toilet seat is that you are sitting on. You can regulate the water that is squirting your private parts and cleaning them off, how warm that is, how long that spray lasts, where in particular on your anatomy it's going to land.
They actually have three buttons for different men,
complex.
Women, and somebody else.
And the Japanese love these toilets. Some of the hotels we've been in are a little older, and you can tell that they have converted
it's a bidet
toilet, sort of like the kind that we use, with an add-on feature on top that has all these wonderful services for you to choose.
This toilet, the first time you use it, it's like getting an enema.
Yeah, kind of.
A nice hot water enema. And they have pictures of the spray that it sprays out in a spray with little bubbles on it so that it cleans very well. It's unbelievable. If you want to see something like this in action, go to the TOTO website, and it will give you a complete explanation about how these toilets work. In Europe and other places, we've seen lots of bidets, but I have not really gotten into the bidet scene.
And in Europe, when you are a traveler, you often are charged to use a toilet outside of your hotel room. We haven't had to pay for a single one. As a traveler, I always carry copious amounts of Kleenex just in case the paper supply is not there. There's always plenty of paper. The bathrooms are neat. There's no toilet paper.
But they all have these bidet toilets.
So they are very well handled, but they have a lot of extra choices.
And of course, the control panel on the wall is completely in Japanese. So it's got, well, I'm going to put a picture on the website. And of course, you're listening to the RV Navigator for May 2026, episode
253. Sorry, we're so excited talking about Japan. We were just off
and running.
If
you go to this month's website, you will see a picture of this gizmo, which is on the wall. And this is not a one-off. This is everywhere. We went to a truck stop, an oasis on the tollway today, and every toilet, right, in the ladies as well as the men's, had a bidet toilet. I don't know what to call it, but you just can't imagine that they are so organized that they have these everywhere and that everybody uses them. But there is toilet paper, too.
And as a female who often has to stand in long lines to get to use the toilet, it feels like they have more of them for us. I don't stand in lines very long, even traveling in a group. There are plenty of places to wash your hands. They really have soap dispensers there. There are many places to dry your hands. You don't have to stand in line and wait. I couldn't be more ecstatic about the toilets.
And free.
They really are
everywhere. We have not paid once. There's not even a little person standing there collecting money like there is in most countries. They just have a system for keeping them all clean. And, of course, the Oasis stop was a huge place, and it served tons of food, but nothing we recognize.
And here again, I have to give a kudu to Google Translate, which is on my phone. When we are like shopping for sandwiches that are pre-made and look quite attractive, but they could be full of salami or they could be full of marshmallows and strawberries, you're just not quite sure what you're going to get. You can just use your cell phone and Google Translate to take a picture of the label, and then you at least get English words for what it is that's inside that sandwich, which
because
helps a lot.
Japanese language is definitely a hindrance, and that's one of those cultural things that we anticipated, but you just can't overcome it because it's just too well, there's just no way to sound it out, or there are 6,000 characters, and there's just no way for us to have any idea of what the Japanese language is saying to us. Most of the time, there is, at least close by, there's an English translation, which may be fairly funny, too, because they translate it literally. We are not driving, but I think that probably we could drive, but of course, they drive on the left.
Another variable to consider.
That would cause some issues, and there might be some wrong turns along the way, but we probably could navigate. But you know, Japan pays no attention to the United States. You look in the stores at the food, and there's just nothing that we would recognize. There are a few McDonald's and Starbucks around, but overall, you go into the 7-Eleven, and the food that you see there is just not what you would expect.
You might be able to tell that it's a snack food or that it's candy, but what exactly it is a mystery unless you use Google Translate.
And even then, it has strange translation. And they have bento boxes, which are quite popular, so that it is a plastic box that has multiple compartments and will have rice and some other stuff in it. Some seaweed and what
vegetables.
We've gone out to dinner several times. Well, quite a lot. And the buffet breakfast that we have at the hotel has some buffet stuff that we would expect, like we had an omelet this morning. But right along with that, of course, you're going to have some rice, and I had a fruit popsicle.
Well, for breakfast, that's right.
Well, you got to try this stuff. Salad and congee and all sorts of other stuff that is just beyond our explanation and beyond what we would understand how to eat it. I mean, what goes with what? So it's a major issue for us. And, of course, we have had rice 3 meals a day. Rice is part of the culture, and it is a staple. Very few potatoes and no other starches, really.
Yams and sweet potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
They have.
Yes, they grow lots of sweet potatoes.
And they like noodles, too.
You're right. We had some ramen.
So
if you come here, you can expect to have a very different experience. And it's much different than going to Europe, I would say.
And everything is very safe. Our guide told us stories about travelers like us that he was leading around that did things like leave their iPad or their phone somewhere, like on the subway. And the Japanese go out of their way to find the owners of the lost items and return them to them. They are just so
amazing.
Programmed to be good citizens,
and
much more so than we are.
And we see no graffiti. You know, riding the subway, you feel very safe. As a matter of fact, we are underdressed in our T-shirts and jeans, whereas most of the people are wearing ties.
Look very nice.
And the Japanese women, wow, they are really dressed to the nines, I would say, in many cases. They're very nicely dressed in fingernails with long extensions and painting on them and, you know, makeup that is very stylized. We haven't gotten into anime. We don't know exactly what that is or how it works, but it is a major issue here. And, of course, I had to do a little bit of shopping.
That was an adventure, too.
So I bought a new camera, which is not going to be available in the United States due to the tariffs or the
sanctions against Chinese stuff.
Against Chinese stuff. So I bought a new DJI Pocket 4. It was an interesting experience because we went to the department store where I could not read a thing.
And with a guide.
With a guide. And the guide talked to the representative, and they gave me a receipt because it's so new that they didn't have them in stock yet. And then we went back. And
on our own,
and we were able to make the purchase, even though the store had no English. I went to their website, and I couldn't read a thing.
And because he's a foreigner and he brought his passport with him to prove it, he got a tax
rebate. Well, I didn't have to pay the tax.
Tax was not charged for him at all.
Which was close
to $100. So it was a good deal. So he got something brand new that he couldn't have gotten at home for a good price.
Yay. And I've been using it every day.
Yes, so you have.
We're having lots of fun trying this out. So data sims, you know, one of the things that you need in order to do the navigation with your phone is your phone has to have data. And if you buy data from one of the companies in the United States, AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, they charge you quite a lot for using your phone outside of the country.
And you really need it to navigate and to use Google Translate.
Exactly right. And in this country in particular, it's a vital thing to have. We haven't made many phone calls, but you have two aspects to this. You have the phone, which is talking, and then you have the data aspect, which is something you could buy separately. And we still pay for phone calls because we haven't gotten a phone SIM, but our phones hold two SIMs. And these days, they're electronic SIMs. You used to have to go down to the store and buy a little chip and put it into your phone, and that would turn on the second service. These days, that's all done electronically, and we use a company called Aerolo, although there are a number of companies that sell worldwide SIMs, and the SIMs is the card that you put into your phone. And we bought here in Japan, got a bargain. I mean, T-Mobile charges on the order of $5 a gigabyte beyond the basic 5 gigabytes that they give you. So we bought a 20 gigabyte SIM for about $25. Which is a pretty good deal. So we put the SIMs, we each got one, we put them in our phones, well, we activated them on our phones, and now we can use data, but phone calls still cost because that's still a T-Mobile project, but we can use the data aspect of it, so we just turn off the data for T-Mobile, and we use the second SIM, and it does the data with local companies.
Another thing that was a real boon to the traveler is when you use the subway that you eat these days here, you no longer need to have a ticket. While we were still at home, we downloaded an app, S-U-I-C-A, Suica, and you choose how much money to assign to that app. And as you use the subway, you tap where you go in and you tap where you go out.
Tap with your phone.
With your phone, and it automatically deducts the amount of money that you are paying for that ride. So you don't have to worry about having enough tickets and how much do they cost.
Well, and you don't have, you know, you stand in front of the machine.
And figure out how to use it,
how to buy a ticket. You buy one ticket and then you go for a ride to your destination and then you get another ticket to come back. This way, your phone houses all of that. And the NFC chip, the near field communications chip in the iPhone and most all other phones too, is connected to the ticketing system. And so you just take your phone and literally tap it. And so the time needed to get through the gate or the ticket taking system is, they can do 10, 20 people a minute each station. And then you just run down to your train, you get on the train and you get off and you swipe it again. And so it deducts the amount of money based on the trip that you just made. And if you make a mistake, you can ride around there all day.
Until you figure it out.
And they'll figure it out. You don't have to pay for the extra if you make
And you can also use the Suica card if you like buy a Coke from a vending machine.
This was another interesting thing.
Small purchases at a...
You bought a water.
I bought a bottle of water. And I just tapped the machine and there it was.
So it's a lot like tapping your credit card, but it's on your phones and it's in our Apple Wallet. And you don't have to turn it on or activate it. It's always ready to go. You just kind of walk
unless
there and
tap used up all the money.
And away you go. You're ready to ride the transit system.
But other things that are different here are less to my liking. Son of a gun, Japanese people really use chopsticks. And so when you are in a restaurant or anywhere where you're going to consume food, that's what you get. And even though I've used them before and I kind of know how they work, I find myself dropping a lot of food in places where I didn't mean for it to be, and it really slows me down.
Yeah, I don't think we've quite mastered chopsticks, but they are certainly what everybody uses. And I'm not sure exactly why knives and forks and spoons are not are not common. And of course, if you get a spoon, it's going to be this porcelain thing that is fairly large for eating your soup. But of course, because you're using chopsticks, you have to hold the bowl right up to your mouth and you go...
Yeah, you eat. Slurping is condoned.
And not only condoned, but it's considered to be a sign of acceptability.
By and large, the hotel rooms here are considerably smaller than we are used to. We've had some rooms in New York City that are the same way, so it's certainly not unheard of at home.
No, not in big cities.
But when we were in Tokyo, we had a room that had everything that we needed, but you could just sit on one chair, if only you had a chair, and reach everything that you needed to use inside that hotel room because it was all right there.
But with that said, it was a very small room, but they emphasized that they had three rooms. They have you can't have the toilet in the bath, literally in the bathroom, because
with the
bathroom is different.
The sink.
So they advertised that they had a toilet room with this fancy toilet in it. And then there is a bathroom, which has just
a tub.
Just a tub. And then, and you say, why isn't the shower over the tub? And the answer is because the whole bathroom is available for you to use to shower in.
And has a big drain hole in the floor.
So the only thing in there is the bathtub, and then everything is sealed so that you can get any or all of the bathroom wet, but it has no sink. So that's kind of a strange outfit. So the hotel had two types of rooms that they had available, and they advertised the three room, one with a separate room for the toilet, and then they had another one that had the toilet in the shower, and so the toilet got all wet all the time. And if you were a typical Japanese tourist, and then it has a sink that's outside of either one of those two rooms. I don't know.
We've been on many OAT trips, and one of the features that they always have is bell service. You are not responsible for bringing your big bag to your room or bringing it back down again when you're ready to leave. And the hotels we've been in Japan don't have bellboys per se.
They don't have any concierge service at all.
Trolleys to haul the bags with.
You're responsible for all of that stuff yourself. And these are not inexpensive hotels that we're staying in. I mean, we paid for four nights in Tokyo, and it was on the order of $250 a night. So it's not like we're staying in cheap hotels that are on the QT and not providing services. But in none of the hotels that we have been in do they provide luggage service. The hotel desk people are friendly enough, and they help.
They
you,
just don't
they
do
don't,
it.
They don't. Yeah, it's not something that's available. So
you know, and no one follows you up to the room and shows you how to turn on the lights and how the air conditioning works.
And of course, Japan has no tipping. Which is wonderful. Our travel company does provide tips in most places, and that's something that's been demanded by the travelers. We don't want to have to tip bus drivers and guides and all the people that we come in contact with. But you're still responsible for tipping the maids and the bell people of the delivery your luggage, but not in Japan. Well, not only don't they have the service, but you don't tip in a taxi on your own. You don't tip anybody, really. It's just not part of their culture. And they're not surly about it. It's just plain not expected.
They pay them a decent salary, and that's what they earn.
It's just a very service-oriented society, I guess.
Typically, Japanese study English. It's a requirement to graduate from school for about 6 years. And between that and memorizing all of the 2,100 letters, I say that in quotation marks, of their alphabet, they spend a whole lot of time memorizing. So they do not have time to study other foreign languages in school the way we claim to do. And when we were here the first time, we could tell that people that we tried to get information from had studied English and had a vague notion of what we were talking about, but they were very reluctant to speak back to us because they didn't want to make a mistake. But now that some years have gone by and young people are freewheeling and courageous, we find a lot of people trying their damnedest to respond to our questions and remarks in English, and the conversation flows a lot more smoothly than it used to, but it's not like being in Europe. You're much more handicapped by what you can get done by speaking.
So what are some of the cultural things that we've done? We came here to see and experience the culture, but of course the things that we've been talking about are definitely part of
the culture. The number one athletic event in Japan is sumo wrestling, which is a really ludicrous sport from our perspective. These young men who want to be sumo wrestlers do their best to lay on the pounds as fast as they can, as hard as they can. Some of them eat as much as 5 pounds of rice a day to fatten themselves up, and they compete with one another no matter how much they weigh. So sometimes a match will be between two people who look like they're vastly different in size. And the simple idea of the match is to stand in a 15-foot circle and schlep your opponent out of the circle.
Well, and none of your body parts can touch the floor beside your feet.
Right.
So we went to a
sumo school.
Sumo, yes.
And, a stable, they call
it. And it was very interesting to talk with them. And they answered lots of questions. It was very interesting. And then we did a geisha, which is the opposite end of the scale.
And I think our movies in particular have given us the impression that geisha are maybe one step up from prostitutes. But you gave me a good analogy to think about what geishas do. A typical geisha woman starts her career after she's turned 18. And if she can sing, dance, play an instrument, make good conversation with people, she turns into a hostess who runs parties. And where in our country, a business might wine and dine a new customer by taking them to a nice golf course, in this country, you take your clients to a geisha party. And the women who are the geishas dress up to the nine in kimonos and have beautiful hairdos, but they do not latch onto one person and have a relationship with them. They circulate through the party, keeping everybody liquored up, perhaps, playing games and having fun together. So it's a much less sordid sort of lifestyle than we had the impression of.
Once again, we went to a very nice, we talked to a geisha mother who was the mentor for many of the younger geisha girls, and she organized these parties, and it's run by the hotel
and an association.
They have a union, and so geisha is definitely on the up and up and very legitimate.
An entertainment business, I would say.
Yes, yeah, and very traditional for Japan.
Another big deal here in Japan is taiko drumming. We went to a drumming school and learned about the different drums, which are made out of tree trunks with a cowhide stretched over them. They come in different sizes and have different pitches, and you do rhythmic drumming with your colleagues either in unison or in counterpoint, and she had us all drumming our hearts out by the end of the presentation.
So every day we do several of these interesting things and very little sightseeing. However, the weather has been excellent, and we have had Midwestern weather, I would say. It's been in the low 70s and very
spring.
Pleasant and sunny, but we haven't done really much tourism. We went to the busiest intersection in the world, where you've seen pictures of the intersection where the people it's chock-a-block with pedestrians when the light green for the pedestrians. So we've done a lot of things like that. We're not going to bore you with every detail of this, but Japan has a lot to offer when it comes to these cultural events, very different than you would find in the United States.
And if I'm going to fly for 14 hours, I want to be somewhere else, and Japan is certainly somewhere else.
Definitely. So we have another week about of this cultural experience. We're going to Kyoto next. We took the Shinkansen today.
The bullet train. That's very cool. It goes 200 miles an hour.
Yes, although today ours only went 157.
Oh.
But that's still pretty fast. And once again, extremely punctual.
Very clean, very well organized.
He said our guide told us that the Shinkansen has never had a fatality, has a on-time record of 13 seconds. So when it says it leaves at 12:34,
you better be ready.
You better be ready. Right. And it stops at the station for precisely 4 minutes, and you have that kind of time to get on, which, of course, we did. Well, that was another interesting thing is that we had our luggage shipped because the Shinkansen doesn't take big suitcases.
Typically, Japanese people are smaller than we are. They have less vacation time than we do because they work so damn hard. And when they go out for a few days for a holiday, they bring a small suitcase, and the trains are built with that in mind. So are the hotel rooms. And here we come along with our giant suitcases that weigh 50 pounds. If we're lucky, they weigh 50 yes. pounds. And so they just don't fit on the trains. They don't fit in the hotel rooms very well. And so there is a business where you can arrange to have your luggage shipped to your next hotel ahead of time so you don't have to wrestle
with it. So
they
pick it up
at the railroad station.
At your departure hotel.
Or your home.
And they then transport it on the same day to your destination hotel. I don't think that we have that available at home.
I don't think we've seen that anywhere.
And so when you're on the Shinkansen, you don't have to worry about messing around with your luggage. And of course, we had a nice bento on the train. Everybody who got on the train had a bento, which means that they had this. I don't know. I have lots of pictures of tofu and rice and
soy
flecks
and
of meat and all sorts of stuff in this lunch box that's created. And we stopped at the train station where we bought the bentos, and there were probably, I don't know, 20, 30
different stores
that were selling uh-huh. different combinations of food.
It was hard to decide.
It was an incredible experience to go and do that. And of course, that's part of the cultural experience that we're getting. Riding the public transportation is great. We have had a bus on occasion to do things that are a little bit further away.
Out in
the countryside. Oh, and we did a home visit, too.
We spent a day with a village who had volunteers come to their community center, ranging in age from 10 to 60, who spoke more or less pretty good English. They taught us how to cook the lunch that we all ate together.
Miso soup that we made ourselves.
They took us around their village and showed us typical homes and tried to give us a feel for what their lives are like.
And we have very tasty ice cream.
Mm-hmm. They're good at ice cream.
What was the flavor? The green?
Oh, matcha.
Okay, gang. Go ask at your nearby Dairy Queen. Ask them for matcha ice cream. It's green.
There must be places.
I thought it was going to be pistachio, but of course.
No, not at all.
Of course not. Well, I think we have filled your brain with far too much stuff about Japan. But if you're thinking about a destination which is modern but very different, and you can feel comfortable here, and you can, you're not going to be in danger. And even though it's a big city, it's extremely safe at all hours of the night, apparently. Mm-hmm. So you might want to consider coming to Tokyo or Japan. Mm-hmm. Japan has really quite a few things in the north. We are not going to the north where the real sightseeing is.
Well, the country stretches from subarctic land. You might remember the Sapporo Olympics. The Winter Olympics were held there. And it's a north-south country, and it extends all the way into tropical areas. So it's longer than California and has different climate zones.
So I'm going to put the map onto the webpage where they superimpose Japan onto the United States, and it runs from Minnesota down to Arkansas. So they have
quite a few climates
and lots of areas that are touristic, and we are kind of avoiding those. So, dear listener, we have lots of RV topics to talk about, but
we're not going to do it now.
We're running kind of low on time because we have many activities to take care of. They do keep us pretty busy.
We have to get up early tomorrow to learn how to put gold leaf on objects.
Gold leaf.
That's our craft project for tomorrow.
Oh, that'll be fun. Let's see. The next month in May, we will be we'll be home for
at
the making of the podcast,
yeah.
But we will be traveling home on a cruise. So we're kind of transitioning In about a week, we transition to the cruise. It's a three-week repositioning cruise, and we've talked about repositioning cruises before. And if you listen to us frequently, you know that we've done several. But this is a cruise that goes from Japan. We do four scenic ports in Japan, and then we head across the Pacific for 8 days, and we hit Alaska. And we're going to be doing four ports in Alaska and then ending up in Seattle.
And even though we spent last summer in Alaska, these are ports that we were not able to drive to because you have to go there on a boat.
Right. And so we will be doing some exciting things for next month as well as this month. So with that said, I guess we will turn it over to next month and hope that you enjoy this podcast. And please send us an email. We always like to hear from you. And konnichiwa.
Sayonara.
Ooh, we sound local.